This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
A third round pick? Yes, please. Who's willing to drive Kirk Cousins to the airport? It is Dukes and Bell, guys, on a hump day. Carl's on his way to Sin City, his annual trip with his boys to do the tournament. So it is our man, Chris Thomas, in for Carl next couple of days. We got a busy week, man. We're going to be hitting the road. We're going to be doing a show at Hooters tomorrow. We're going to be at Twin Peaks. So we'll give you all the details on that. We start every hour of every show with a big old, hey, man. Oren is now technically producing since you were an on-air talent today.
Ooh.
Let me get this straight. They're going to do another edition of Quarterbacks with Kirk Cousins?
Here's the thing, Mike.
I can't wait to see this.
When I saw that this morning, it was announced that Jared Goff, Joe Burrow, and yes, Kirk O'Chains himself will be appearing on the second edition of Quarterbacks.
Oof.
Oh, my goodness.
Going into someone's trap.
And yeah. There's going to be a lot of that. Yeah. And then there's also going to be a lot of capitulation, Mike.
I didn't forget how to play quarterback.
From Kirk as the season unfolds.
I'm good. That was a bit of a clerical error.
Here's instantly what came to my mind. How are he and his agent, Mike McCartney, going to spinaroo this one to make it look like he was done dirty in Atlanta?
Well, I think more importantly, how are Carl and I going to get on Netflix complaining about Kirk Cousins?
Very true.
I mean, you need to have the ugly, angry reaction of like the Falcon fans with pitchforks and torches and Carl and I stoking the flames. I mean, we need to be. There's been a number of times there's been storylines and, you know, networks have come in and shot us. And it's funny because you can always tell when there's TV cameras in the studio because and Ori can attest to this. And it's something I learned from Steak is to speak in the ultimate TV soundbite where you just get ramped up. Well, I'll tell you what's got to happen this week. So if they're looking for some content, we can provide that when it comes to Kirk Cousins and his crazy roller coaster soap opera. One thing for certain, if we could get a third round pick, and that's exactly what we got for Matt Ryan after, unfortunately, he got devalued and the Falcons lost all leverage once they made an ill-fated attempt, an ill-advised attempt to go after Deshaun Watson a couple of years ago about the same time of the year. But a third round for Cousins, if Josina Anderson is accurate, now who are they fielding calls from?
Well, let's look at the teams that are left, shall we? You have the Browns, who I would think would still be the most likely option, even though now apparently there's rumors that they're flirting with Carson Wentz to potentially be their quarterback. Oof. Oh, my goodness. You have the Giants who are still uncertain. You have the Titans that are still uncertain. And now the Steelers become all that more in play because apparently, Mike, Minnesota's off the Aaron Rodgers train.
Yeah, which didn't make a lot of sense. I mean, I don't know what the story is with J.J. McCarthy. I mean, we know what's happened with Anthony Richardson up in Indianapolis, and this guy hadn't even played a down yet. And, you know, he was looking great. He certainly threw a bunch of touchdown passes in preseason. Didn't look like the game. No, albeit preseason, but the game was pretty much coming to him. And then he has the injury. And then you hear about him putting weight on. And anytime a story like that leaks, you're like, well, that's coming right from the team. You know, they're not happy that he put on some LBs. You know, like he's put on his freshman 15 in the NFL in the offseason. So we'll see. But I would think, look, you don't draft a guy top 15, not to go use him at some point.
Well, exactly. And you're basically saying, by bringing in Aaron Rodgers, you're basically saying, we don't believe in you yet.
Right.
Because you're not ready to take the reins.
We're not willing to believe that you can do what Jaden Daniels did or what Bo Nix did.
Exactly.
Certainly Caleb Williams couldn't do it for a number of reasons, but they've tried to address some of that with Chicago. And we believe in Michael Penix Jr. But, you know, it's funny. I had this when we were up in – and by the way, let me start the show by mentioning thanks to everybody. I mean, it was just the fact that we can thank everybody for showing up. like 130 miles from the radio station up in Tennessee.
Awesome.
It was great. From towns like Tryon and Ringgold and Dalton, and even from Adairsville, we had folks who came all the way up to say hi to us and hang out. And one young man who was going to school at Tennessee, coming all the way from the south side, stopping up. But anyway, one of those guys, I'll give a shout out to Jesse, was talking about, you know, what exactly are we going to get? What exactly is Penix going to be? And you know, we were talking about all these big Falcon, he wore his Falcon gear. And I said, I like to think we feel that Penix is ready to go. He looked certainly up to the task of a big national audience on Sunday night. All the pressure. He threw a bad pick. Then he came back and threw a beautiful touchdown pass against the Commanders. Certainly, if the coach doesn't screw up clock management, we're in a position to maybe kick a game-winning field goal. So I think I see enough to say I believe in Penix, because he was basically saying, no, everyone just kind of assumes Penix is good to go.
Yeah, I think people are saying that because they are tantalized by the talent, because we see the big arm, like you said. We see the pinpoint accuracy when he's on. So there was nothing, at least we can say this, Mike, there was nothing that happened last season that would say that he's not. So you can, using that as the angle to say, well, now he's going to have a full off season as the guy. Here's the only thing, though, Mike. Here's what I don't like. I don't like the idea of Kirk Cousins hovering. That's the only thing for me. So I really hope that these rumors are true and they're able to move him sooner than later. I get it. It's a business decision. They're doing what they said that they were going to do, which is what's best for the franchise, which right now is keeping Kirk Cousins. But like you said, if you're going all in on this guy, go all in on him and get me Gardner Minshew or somebody to back him up.
Well, I mean, we said it and a lot of guys thought we were kidding, but I mean, as far as the cost, and because he's still out there, is Jameis Winston. I mean, and I know some guys say, oh, come on, you can't do that. But he's capable. Look, if we lose, you know, not even going to say it. If you have to lose the starting quarterback for more than two or three games, and the season's lost anyway.
Right. It's a sunk cost.
There's just not many. Now, this is where you still have these people go, well, why don't we just keep Cousins? Can't do that. I mean, they're doing it the way they should. Carl's been on this from the jump. This is the way you play it. You know, if you can find a way to trade him, yes, that $10 million they just dumped last weekend, that goes away. That gets absorbed by the next team. There's ways to, you know, to mitigate some of these costs. But if you can find somebody who's either dealing with an injury or doesn't get what they want right now, maybe the Browns. I mean, look, the Browns have been the ones that have probably been the most, at least it's made it to the media, Chris, has seemed to be outspoken that they're interested in Cousins. They just don't want to pay for him.
Right. They're basically engaging in the world's most expensive game of chicken right now, which is $27.5 million and whatever potential pick you could get back for that. So you're sitting there as Kirk Cousins and his agent and his staff right now saying, all right, Falcons, well, I'm really hoping that somebody gets injured in camp or in the summer and I can go somewhere else. And if you're the Falcons, you're saying, yeah, buddy, that's what exactly we told you was going to happen. So when you went crying, knocking on Arthur Blank's door, trying to make a scene, and then that got let out to the media, it didn't do anything. It didn't change our mind one bit. Terry Fontenot came out, Mike, not once but twice, doubled down on it and said, we are comfortable with Kirk Cousins as the backup. Now, a third-round pick changes that, because you dump him for that in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. I would even say a fourth-round pick changes that.
Right.
But essentially, right now, what the Falcons are doing, they're saying, listen, until we get an offer that satisfies us, he's going to be here.
A third-rounder is what, as we said, you have Matt Ryan, that's what you got from the Colts. I'd be happy that we don't have a third-rounder, as you guys know or may not know. We've only got a one, a two, and a four, and a seven. Two sevens, actually. So hopefully we could find a way to get some of those those picks. And then you want more picks to be able to move up and if you're somebody you desire in the third round, because last year they made a push for defense. And, you know, Rook, we got to hope that this guy takes a big step. Now, I don't mind them risking it and, you know, risk it, no biscuit, but he's got to be the man. And last year, unfortunately, he was on IR for much of the season. He only got to play in eight games. That's why, you know, I can't tell you that Fontenot blew the draft last year because I haven't seen these guys play yet. But I haven't seen, certainly, Braylon Trice, you know, Dorlus Barely, you know, not even. So we'll find out where we're going to go and maybe get this thing done by the weekend. Or what do you think timeline? It's going to be right before the draft.
I think the Falcons are willing to wait past the draft and even get the pick for next year. Because I think you don't get this far without being willing to go all the way. And speaking of the draft, by the way, Mike, do you think the Falcons' draft plans could have potentially changed by a move that they made a little earlier this afternoon when they picked up Jordan Fuller?
Yeah, we were talking about safety, and certainly, you know, Malachi Starks was on a number of people's lips. The Miami Dolphins seem to be thinking about him if somebody wants to trade up. See, I love the idea of trading down and still finding a way to get, you know, Mike Green, if possible. You know, I mean, or you know, take any of your favorite, whoever your favorite Georgia Bulldog defensive lineman is going to be. But we know that there's probably, you know, a chance to move back, pick up some of those picks we don't have, and something which we've never done. It's just something, and it has no bearing on what, how Terry thinks or operates. As we know, the year that they had the A.J. Terrell pick, there was some talk they were trying to move down. Dimitroff couldn't find a partner at the time. Takes two to tango. But I would imagine that. Have our cake and eat it, too. We've got Leonard Floyd. We have a temporary spackle on our defensive line situation. Upgrade at least one guy. But I still think we go D-tackle or edge rush.
Yeah, I do, too. I'm not sure where, though, because Hair Helmet, as you like to call him, he had his latest mock draft out today. He has both Mykel Williams and Jalen Walker going in the top 10.
Yeah, so we have no shot at Mykel Williams. I knew we had no shot at Walker. That's a given. But can you go get the impact guy? See, this is where it gets tricky. We've joked around about the Georgia Bulldogs and how they've been so good for the Eagles and so good for a lot of other NFL teams.
Yes.
Just never for the Falcons. And then they made the big show of bringing 22. I don't know how 22 people can go to a pro day. I mean, what does a 22nd guy in the deal room do anyway?
He's just making everybody's lunch.
Make sure the coffee is hot.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, you got 22 guys from the Falcons who went to the pro day. You guys saw that. And then, but is this the year that these guys are the good dogs you want to draft? And I know before you guys even get nasty, and you will, on the text line, well, Mike, you, blah, blah. No, I get it. But the window for dog players to be drafted has, you know, been the last 15, 20 years for this organization they missed on. But then, ironically, is this the year you get the edge rusher, which I think we all agree is priority one? Is Mykel Williams going to be that elite edge rusher, or is he just going to be, and not just, but will he just be a complete outside linebacker, whatever you want, he can do everything you need, but is he going to be a guy that produces the double-digit sacks?
And now the main question, I think, becomes if a James Pierce Jr. falls, if a Mike Green falls, and you're eyeing them, you say, okay, is this our best opportunity, as you alluded to earlier in the segment, to pick up one of those picks that we lost and move back in the draft? Because I think as long as one of those guys are there, like if Williams and Walker aren't going to be there anyway,
right,
and depending on how they grade these guys out, if Mike Green and Shamar Stewart and some of these other guys, James Pierce, are just a notch below them, then trading back to me, Mike, makes a ton of sense.
We'll talk to a D. Orlando Ledbetter tomorrow. He's out at
Friday, we'll talk.
Friday, I should say. Yeah, I'm always looking ahead to Friday. Thursday, guys, we're going to be at the Hooters on Cumberland right there on Cobb Parkway. We'll be watching Georgia and Gonzaga, which tip around 4:30. And then, of course, Friday, we're going to be our usual weekly visit or biweekly visit down to Twin Peaks and Buckhead. And we will talk to D about what he sees. Thanks, Mike, over there at Alabama. They're doing their stuff today. A little bit later this hour, we'll break down the move we made today in the signing, what it means for the secondary. But next, coming up on Dukes and Bell, a guy that really always moves the needle. Usually Trae Young fans want to strangle this guy, but I don't think you can complain certainly about Trae Young as he's checked all the boxes this year: leadership, scoring, assists, the whole shebang. But Brian Geltzeiler, we'll talk about the NBA. What's up with the Hawks? Are we anything more than a, you know, play in and then done? Or does he think we can actually make a run with the Celtics potentially looming as a number 2-7 matchup? We'll get into all that coming up next. It's Dukes and Bell this hour, brought to you by All Four Seasons Garage and Entry Doors. Chris in for Carl.
He should be in my eyes, and I'm not saying it's going to bias, but I think he should be Rookie of the Year. I mean, what he's been doing this year, he's been thrown into the fire as a starter. I mean, you put him up against some of the other guys in the running, I think his numbers speak for himself too. So he's just not even focused on that, and that's the best part about it. And we're kind of making it easy for him to just focus on the game, focus on yourself, and having fun and having games like tonight and just letting it loose and letting it fly.
That's Trae Young, guys, talking about Zachary Risacher, Trae Young, who's been really good. And he says, hey, man, let's make this cat the Rookie of the Year. Generally, the Rookie of the Year gets a lot of shots on a really bad team. Well, this year we traded DeAndre Hunter. Jalen Johnson got hurt, but he's been good. And he's popped 21 last night, 5-9 from three. He's had a 30-point night. He's had some big nights. So I would say yes. And that's another example of Trae showing some leadership and caring about others, including his little buddy, Zachary Risacher.
Oui.
Talk more about the Hawks and around the NBA with the playoffs looming with Brian Geltzeiler. He's from Sirius XM NBA analyst and always rocks the boat, man. Gets people fired up every time he comes on the show. Chris is in for Carl today, Brian. What do you think? We'll start there. What do you think about Risacher's first season?
He's been great. Listen, I picked him to be my Rookie of the Year before the season began, and I'm not sorry that I did. It's, you know, you've had the inconsistencies that you'll see of a 19-year-old dude over the course of the season, but it's starting to come into form in a really good way right now. The The physical profile's there, real long. I mean, almost 6'10 long. And athletic and smooth. And, you know, the thing about Reese Hoshea, the whole book on him was does everything good but nothing great. And I think that's what you're seeing. He's a good, well-rounded player. Is this a superstar in the making? Probably not. But a starter on a playoff team and a productive guy, there's no doubt he's going to round into that. I like what I've seen this year. And, again, as the season's gone on, he's gotten better and better.
Brian, speaking of accolades, why isn't Dyson Daniels higher on the DPOY list?
It's a great question, and it has to do with bias. The bottom line is this. There is two biases. First of all, there's one main awards bias that drives me crazy, which is the advanced stats bias, where you do have a lot of voters who are spending more time looking at spreadsheets than basketball courts. And so they see certain things that jump off the page on a spreadsheet, and that tends to rule the day. And at times that can almost dictate a narrative of what you see on the floor based upon what you're reading on the spreadsheet. So I like it to be the other way around. Is the spreadsheet reinforcing what I see with my eyes? Not are my eyes reinforcing what I'm reading on the spreadsheet? So I think you get that with voters. The other thing when it comes to this award in particular, Defensive Player of the Year, there's a big man bias. You don't see a lot of perimeter players win this award. And even with, you know, people I'm talking to around the league right now, the name you're hearing the most is Evan Mobley. And listen, I think Evan Mobley's had a super season, and the Cavs have been awesome. And I think if he wins the award, it will be far from a travesty. But this I can promise you guys, from all I've watched Dyson Daniels this year, I don't know that I'm going to pick him for Defensive Player of the Year. He's going to land on my ballot because he's been that good. He's that disruptive. And I feel like I look at the Hawks, and I look at that Murray trade, by the way, guys. Right. Oh, my God, what a heist. The Hawks, Daniels has been a better fit on the Hawks than Murray ever was. Right. And you collected two first-round picks with him, which is unbelievable. So I kind of look at what Daniels has been to the Hawks, and I shudder to think where they'd be without him. He's not going to win the award. There's no doubt. But all I can say is that as a voter, he's highly likely at this stage of the season to land on my ballot.
Talking about the NBA guys, our usual good guy, man. We like this dude. Brian Geltzeiler is usually bringing some heat, and we'll see if he gets some say to maybe tick off Hawks fans. So far, it's all bouquets. By the way, you mentioned Evan Mobley. He got faked out of his jock last night by Kawhi Leonard as they took down the Cavs. You buying the Clippers getting hot? Again, if the Clark can stay healthy, or how do you see that whole play-in? There's some really good teams in the West all jockeying for the same spot.
Yeah, I'm buying the Clippers, and I'm buying the Clippers for a couple reasons. Number one, guys, they guard. They're really good defensively. Jeff Van Gundy's running that defense, and it's his vision. I mean, Chris Dunn's starting because he defends people well, and they value that part of the game. Listen, Norm Powell last night played 17 minutes, all right? He was returned from an injury. He didn't look great, but the bottom line is that he wasn't defending well. This is how crazy it's got with the Clippers. The weakest defender that plays consistent minutes for them is probably Kawhi Leonard, who is not the defensive player that he once was. So you look at where they are and how well they guard. And listen, Zubac, to me, is a candidate for most improved player with the year that he's had. He's always been good. He's been phenomenal this year. So, yeah, I think the Clippers are capable of beating anyone in a playoff series. Anyone. Now, are they capable of beating everyone? Probably not, because you're counting on McCaw to stay healthy. I don't know that he can. There's the Harden piece, which, you know, listen, Harden last night, 5 of 18 from the field, 2 of 11 from 3, did have 9 assists and was only the third leading scorer. Scorer was smart enough to keep feeding both Leonard and Zubac, who were hot. But you do wonder, you know, about Harden's playoff history and when that rears its ugly head. I would think it's going to. With all that said, I do buy the Clippers. I think they're very good. But again, it's going to take a unique team in this stacked Western Conference to be able to win 3 playoff series. And I just don't know that the Clippers are the one that can.
Do the Cavaliers have what it takes to stave off Boston in a playoff series?
Yes, they do. Do I think they will? No. But do they have what it takes? There's no doubt they have what it takes. They have built a very deep, very versatile roster. Because you look at how they start. I mean, they play one wing, 2 bigs, and essentially 2 smaller guards. But they go to the bench with all these different types of wings, from Hunter to Jerome to Dean Wade to Okoro. Like, they got a good bench. They got good guys off this bench that and all fill in different wing spots. And because of the versatility of the starters, because Mobley can move over and play center. Mitchell can move over and play point guard. Like, they can stack the lineup with bench wings also. They got a ton of shooting. They guard really well. There's not a bad thing you could say about the Cavaliers. The thing is, when you hit the playoffs, it's different. The game is different. The game slows down. It's a matchup type of game. And from a matchup standpoint, I don't know that I think the Cavs are going to struggle wing-wise with the Celtics. That's one of the reasons they did what they had to do to get DeAndre Hunter, because he at least helps them match up athletically with one of Tatum or Brown, and that's going to be their big issue. With all that said, keep in mind, guys, last year the Celtics ran through the Eastern Conference, and they didn't have Kristaps Porzingis. They're not running through the Eastern Conference this year and getting to the finals without a healthy version of Kristaps Porzingis, because Cleveland will take him. And listen, without Porzingis, it'd be tough for them against New York also.
Right.
He's vital to what they do this year, especially against Cavs.
It is a Brian Geltzeiler, guys, serious XMNBA analyst. We talked a lot about the ESPN bias, how they don't pay any attention to Cleveland and Oklahoma City, and Stephen A. got in his feels about it, but it's 100% accurate because they just don't give the love. I thought it was impressive a few weeks back when OKC went into Boston, and Mark Dano, the coach, throws in like this lineup using his bigs, and like Missoula and Boston has like no way to counter it. It's just like, wow, the guy was playing chess. I mean, can OKC, on the same argument, can they handle the bright lights over there in the West?
I think so. I mean, the thing I worry about with OKC is playoff experience. If there's one thing that we've been taught, it's very rare for a team without a wealth of playoff experience to advance their way in the finals and win a championship. Have we seen it? Sure. We saw the Warriors in 15 do it. We saw the Raptors in 19. But more times than not, you're going to see a situation here where a team will run into where they're going to run into a foxhole spot where there's a lot of adversity, and they need guys that have been there to be able to help guide them out. I worry about OKC in that scenario. With that said, the way Dagnall's experimenting with these two bigs, The results are even better than what I thought they'd be. This is the deepest team in the league. And again, experience-wise, are they good enough? We'll see. I mean, listen, Denver to me is a tough matchup. So it's interesting. We talked about that Boston game a couple weeks ago, and they were great against Boston. There's no doubt. But then you look at the second matchup a week ago Monday, and that, like, that, you know, two matchups in 3 days of OKC versus Denver. OKC won the first one. They gave up 140 to Denver in the second one. So you kind of look at where those matchups lie, and it's not going to be easy. Now, listen, I think OKC could do all right against a team like Golden State that's going to struggle with their size. I think you could see something like that. I'm not completely sold on either Houston or Memphis for the same reasons that I worry about OKC, and OKC is better than them both. The Lakers loom interesting with healthy LeBron James because they've gotten really good play inside from Jackson Hayes. It's one of the unsung heroes on why their defense has been as good as it's been after the Anthony Davis-Luka trade. Hayes has been terrific for them. So you look at that, and the combination of the fact that they're going to run the other four guys around Jackson Hayes are going to be LeBron at 6'8", Luka at 6'8", and Hachimura at 6'10", plus there's Dorian Finney-Smith at 6'6", 6'7", who's had a resurgence also for the Lakers because he's back. You know, he knows how to play with Luka better than anybody from his Dallas days.
Right.
To me, the Lakers and the Nuggets are two big threats. The other one I wouldn't sleep on are the Minnesota Timberwolves, who with Randall and DiVincenzo back have hit their stride, and Randall's changed his game since he came back from injury, is finding people a lot more. And the Timberwolves are deep. They're tough. Naz Reid, who improves every year, has once again improved this year in a way where he's going to be a real, real force for them in the playoffs. So Minnesota 40-30 here, to me, is a very, very dangerous team.
Brian, before we let you go, what in the heck is going to happen with Philadelphia next year?
It's so much of what happens with Philadelphia is going to be based upon if they keep this pick. If they keep this pick, I could see them taking a step backwards to build a little bit because of Maxey and McCain and whoever they would get with this top six pick. If they lose this pick, they're stuck. They're stuck having to try to run this thing back with Paul George and Joel Embiid. And listen, and the Embiid extension decision, and as much as we want to lay that at Daryl Morey's feet, that kind of money isn't thrown around. If ownership, and that's an experienced ownership group that Josh Harris leads. If ownership doesn't rubber stamp that extension, it doesn't happen in that way. Embiid's got to want to be at the top of his game again. The work ethic thing for him and getting in the proper shape continues to get in the way of him fulfilling his potential. It plays a role in the injuries. And listen, Joel Embiid, they established a culture with him at a very early stage when he got to Philadelphia where everybody kind of did what he said. He did what he wanted to do. He didn't have to listen to anybody. And now that horse is out of the barn. I mean, the one term I keep using, guys, for Embiid and the Sixers is that he keeps pooping on their head, making thanking him for the hat. I mean, that's how that keeps going. So now you have a situation where Embiid, who never should have played in the Olympics, and the knee wasn't good in the Olympics, couldn't give him anything this season. Right. And listen, they got caught holding the bag with Paul George. They held out cap space. They knew they had a shot at him. They knew the Clippers were going to come up short. They knew they could be highest bidder. When a player like Paul George, with his career numbers, has this kind of drop-off at his age 34 year, it ain't getting better. And that's the thing you look at with the Sixers. And Embiid's untradeable right now. George, unless you're taking back somebody else's garbage contract, is very much untradeable right now. So they're really stuck. But again, I could see them just even attaching a pick or two to Paul George to get rid of him if they end up with a top three to top five pick and they get a Flag, a Harper, a Bailey, an Edgecombe. One of these guys that they feel like they could build around them, a Maxey and McCain, you have an interesting young core for the future, and you don't have to worry as much about the Embiid-George thing if it's not going to work out for you. It gives you more flexibility. If they don't keep this pick, if they don't land in the top six, and OKC gets their pick outside the top six, this is it continues to be a disaster for the Sixers. One more quickie about the Sixers. I would be very, very surprised to see Daryl Morey and Nick Nurse both in their jobs there next year. I think Bob Myers, who keep in mind is a lead advisor to the Washington Commanders that Josh Harris is also the majority owner of, I could see Bob Myers stepping in to try to clean this Philly situation up because I think they're going to say goodbye to Daryl Morey here.
Well, nothing warms the cockles of our heart more than hearing them struggle in Philadelphia, Brian. Appreciate your time as always, man. And again, we'll see. Hopefully, we know that Trey's capable of getting us into the playoffs. Just a matter of what we're going to do if we wind up, 2-7.
I'm happy with Trey.
Right on.
You guys have heard me so much, not be happy with Trey. You know what? Listen, Trey had a little bit of a tough period after the trade deadline when they traded Hunter, where he went into selfish mode, but he's kind of snapped out of that a little bit. And the infrastructure they're building between Johnson and Reese Shea and Daniels and Okongwu, to build this thing around Trae Young and keep him. Trae Young right now, I will say this, and you've rarely heard me say this, guys, more valuable to the Hawks than he's going to be to anybody else in the trade. The Hawks won't be able to get a lot for him in a trade. Keep him around. Let him keep up this role of distributor because he's making young guys around him better, and the Hawks need that.
Right on, brother. That's our man, Brian Geltzeiler from Sirius NBA. Thanks, man. Enjoy the weekend.
My pleasure, guys. You too. Take care.
All right, guys. Coming up on Dukes and Bell, we'll get our daily download. You look at the headlines. Tell you about this Falcon move. Who's this guy we brought in? He's got some reps. He's got some experience. Also, apparently Carolina. Those guys are here in the chatter. We'll tell you about them dropping the hammer next. Day here in Atlanta, man. This is why you love living here. You got friends who live up in the Midwest or the Northeast, and you go, look at us. Now, granted, the pollen is starting to kick in a little bit, but
yeah, it is
freaking beautiful. Top down today, music blasting, having fun. This hour of the show, guys, brought to you by Padley. Sell your home for cash fast. That's PADLYBuys.com.
Let me ask you something real quick. Does your soundtrack change based on the weather?
It does. Today, it was, you know what I had on today, actually? It was, I'm just in the gym, they were playing some Michael Jackson. So today, I was off the wall.
Oh, great.
On the way to work today, it was all off the wall. And it's funny because when you're in traffic and somebody sees you grooving to it, and then, it's like that day I told the story, Oren, big jam up on Midtown. The Connector was a blank show. So I just went all the way down to Northside and took the back way. And I was at the light down by North Avenue on Northside. And I was blasting Rick James, You and I. And this lady, a woman of color, parks is next to me in a, I guess it was a Lincoln Navigator or whatever. And she looks over and she goes, "What do you know about You and I by Rick James?" I mean, I maintain street cred over on the north side.
I will to this day, I will stand by this argument right here. Off the Wall is Michael Jackson's best album.
Yeah, I agree. I will die on that hill too. And he had three great albums, but that's the one for me. And it's also the one I would roller skate to and then make out with chicks. I mean, I was 11, 12. That's what you did back then.
They had the big disco ball hanging from the ceiling.
United Skates in Massapequa.
Yeah. There you go.
A couple skate there. There you go, Mike. Yes.
Mom pulled me out by the ear. I was kissing this girl. Literally, I was on roller skates. She rolls me out, pulled me by the ear. Hey, man. True story. All right. We had my mom on the radio back in the old days. We did this segment called Ma Bell. It was sponsored by AT&T. She's come on and Steak would ask, give me some embarrassing stuff about Mike. Speaking of which, I think Steak may stop by Twin Peaks on Friday if he can do it. You know, all this kid stuff that he's got on his plate.
Well,
the family obligations.
I know this. Get you two together on a headset at a bar.
Yeah.
That's, you want to talk about appointment listening.
It's on like Donkey Kong, so stay tuned for that. Right now, though, it's time for some daily, daily download.
Story number one.
Hey, man, Jordan Fuller is now a Falcon. He's only 27. 55 career starts over 5 years, initially with the Rams and the Panthers. He knows Raheem Morris, so there's familiarity there. If he can stay healthy, Chris, it's a nice upgrade. I mean, he can't be like Justin Simmons was a major letdown. I think this guy's got more in his tank. If he's, again, if he's healthy, we know we have Helms back there as a reserve, but what do you make of this at safety?
I like it because of the veteran presence. I think we saw last year Simmons just didn't have it anymore. He hasn't signed anywhere yet last time I checked. So an obvious upgrade there. The only concern, he did miss about half the year last year with a hammy. So we'll see if he's fully recovered from that. But if he is, Mike, there's your starter. There's
right.
your starter opposite Jesse Bates.
And I know that some folks have felt we may go, you know, as Malachi Starks or maybe the safety position. I still think we could go defensive tackle and or edge in the second round, or corner. I still think you want to get another corner in this mix. I know that, you know, Mike Hughes, we can debate the metrics. Sometimes it doesn't tell the whole story. D-Led likes to bring up, you know, quarterbacks throw for 66% against him. So that is a problem. But it is, he's capable. But I would still think you'd like to have your next, you know, starting corner of the future playing nickel and then moving ahead to play against our opposite AJ moving forward from this draft.
The more I see these moves trickle in by the Falcons, and that's sort of what it's been. It's been like a trickling of a spackle here and a potential starter here. Mike, I think they're going to trade down. I really do.
I've been asking for this, and Oren knows because he's been listening to me bellyache about it. Things that Mike complains about every spring. Braves' lack of pitching. Why don't the Falcons ever trade down? And it's just been something that they've just never done. They've always gone the other way, which is fine. We moved up for Desmond Trufant, moved up for Julio, have moved up in later rounds. We moved up for Ruka. So we'll see. Story number two gets us to college hoops.
Story number two.
Yeah, they got no respect because, you know, the strength of schedule was pretty much self-explanatory for North Carolina. But needless to say, their head coach was able to use this. Hubert Davis was using that as motivation. They absolutely blitzkrieged the Aztecs. San Diego State, I mean, this thing was, I mean, it was painful to watch this blowout last night up in Dayton in the play-in.
Revenge is sweet, Mike Bell, because that's all we've been hearing all week is North Carolina this and North Carolina that. North Carolina didn't do anything. They went 23-13. They had a little bit of a disappointing season. They were a borderline team. And then all of a sudden, the whole country's against you. And they used that as a rallying cry to beat the brakes off of San Diego State. And now, the ultimate irony, Mike, is they're an 11 seed.
Everybody, you know, complains about, you know, strength of schedule. There's always a team. You know, this year, I mean, how many years Seth Greenberg was like literally the case study? Virginia Tech was always on that cusp. This year, West Virginia had a bit of a beef. Now, the strength of schedule that they lost was, you know, North Carolina scheduled tougher opponents, but I still don't think losing on a tougher schedule. Well, hell, they just schedule everybody who's in the top 25, get your brains beat it, and maybe you make the tournament. But, you know, they only won, you know, was 1-12 was the record against the quad one they're now referring to.
Quad one. That is the phrase of this year.
Quad
your
one.
Quad one.
The good
victories.
Guys, the good teams. Not that complicated. Hey, man, let's get to the buzzer beater. And that was the big story last night. Great story out of Montgomery, Alabama. That's Alabama State. I don't know, man. What did you think of that? I mean, you knew the football pass. They saw with the time they had. They could have maybe worked something along the lines of what Christian Laettner did against Kentucky. But they went for that play, and they nearly coughed it up themselves.
Well, that's why they're Alabama State and not Kentucky, Mike Bell.
No, but I mean, I'm saying it just, you could have worked, you technically had a better look at the basket.
Yeah.
But they did this, and it sounded like this.
Simpson will inbound under his own basket. Pinedo pressures the ball. He throws a baseball right-hand pass, arcing toward the far free throw line. It's loose out of the basket. Laid up and in by Knox. 7/10 of a second to go. Amar Knox gives Alabama State the lead, 70-68.
There you go.
You know what that was, Mike? that was an unexpected, really good opening act for a main concert that you're going to see. Right. You never heard of them before. You maybe listen to a song or two on the drive into the show, and then they play just as good as the main act that you're going
but
to
that
see.
Was, I mean, like I said, that was fun. That's, look, I guess the playing game, we all, some of us, you know, of a certain age, okay, me, you know, like, ah, we don't need 68 friggin' teams in this thing, but it was great. You got, you just, guess what you got? Carolina punched their ticket, validated everyone's belly aching, and then, or they, sorry, they countermanded the belly ache and validated what they were saying. And then, of course, you got the great story with Alabama State. We got more hoops tonight. Mount St. Mary's against American. That's D.C., by the way, for those who don't know. And then Xavier going up against Carl's Longhorns, 11-on-11 violence.
I think Carl is going to take a quick break from whatever casino he's at to pop on a TV and watch his Longhorns. Mike, I don't think they're going to win this one. Xavier's four-point favorite.
I gave him $20 to put money on St. John's today. Carl does this every year, goes out to Vegas. It's always a great weekend, kind of a sausage fest, if I'm honest. But anyway, it's a good weekend because the tournament, there's nothing like being in a big sports book like Caesars or that, what's the place where Andy Randy were down on Fremont Street? Circa. Circa's got this unbelievable
pool.
The weather's warming up. That's an unbelievable spot. I mean, up there with those gigantic screens and everything. But to be sucking a drink in a pool, hot chicks, and you got like, you know, a nice like five-team teaser and a parlay going, jelly. Hey, man, story number three, the Braves bring an oldie but a goodie back.
Number three.
Craig Kimbrell. Yes, you heard me right. He's still pitching. He didn't pitch well last year.
No.
He had a 5.5 ERA and a under 500 record and a negative WAR, which is almost impressive for a relief pitcher to do. I heard Bo Johnson talking about that. Bo Johnson was as fired up about this move.
Not liking it.
And we all know that he works at Truist Park every single day. So we'll see him. Mike, listen, we know the deal. Braves need more help, especially on the back end of the bullpen. This guy has, I think, over 400 saves in his career. He knows how to do it. So you're just hoping that he comes back here. He feels the juice. He's on a contending team. And for $2 million, maybe you turn back Father Time.
Well, look, you know, he'd be the setup man, situational setup man for Raisel Iglesias. I don't think he's the eighth inning guy necessarily, unless he somehow catches lightning in a bottle. I know that there'll always be a soft spot for Kimbrell. And certain folks of an age, okay, you weren't here. There was a year the Braves played the Dodgers in the playoffs, and they needed to get a 5-out save. And was it Freddie Gonzalez wouldn't do it? And it was Kimbrell, and he could have done it, and they didn't. And the Dodgers came back to win the series, and that was probably the last chance after the post-Bobby Cox era where the Braves could do anything. And after that, it was all wait till Truist Park, and that was LC Road. That one really hurt. But Kimbrell's back. You know, so that famous little look he has where he kind of puts the glove down and gets dialed in. And we'll see. I mean, look, you have no expectations. What was it, $2 million deal?
$2 million.
Yeah, I mean,
that's it.
You can't complain about that.
No.
But this is where we live, guys. This is why when we asked Alex about it and Steak talked about it with him the other day, they just don't spend the big money. They don't commit the big dollars to pitching. 2021, he put the night shift together. That was amazing. But again, Matzik was damaged goods to a lot of general managers around baseball. He just was playing unbelievably. You know, this is just the way that Alex operates. He will not commit big dollars to pitching. He goes for bargains and deals. Chris Sale was unbelievable. Ronaldo Lopez was a big guest. That's worked out, knock wood. But this is where we're at. And maybe there'll be one more bargain basement shop before they break camp in Northport.
I think something that's being under-talked about as we head towards opening day, Mike, it sounds like, and we talked to Grant McCauley about this when spring first started, I think it's worth mentioning again, the six-man rotation is going to be in play again.
Yep.
And you don't have six guys right now.
Well, Ian Anderson's got to get dialed in. I know everyone's saying, there he is. That's the real Ian Anderson. Because, I don't know, maybe he got spooked by how good Strider looked. I don't know. It's like he was aiming. He just had no juice whatsoever as he came in after Strider just looked unbelievable. Strider looks like we'll get another start in spring training. And do you really need to send him to Gwinnett for all the dog and pony show of the rehab stuff?
I just, as long as I hear that he's okay, I don't think so.
I mean, we're not, again, as we say, we're not orthopedists. We just
know.
Go to them.
Yeah. So I say, you know, until, if the Braves don't feel comfortable on opening day sending him out there or opening week, I'm fine with it because, again, like you just said, they just know stuff that we don't.
And the Dodgers and Cubbies over in Japan. No, I hate the fact that now they go back to a spring train. Just start to see, make those guys play in like April and make that the real beginning to the season. Anyway, big crowd. Otani hits a home run yesterday.
Yeah.
They ruled it. You knew they weren't going to call it back. It was basically like the Orioles Yankees back in the day when the kid put the glove in. A fan got the ball and they said, no fan interference. They weren't going to take an Otani home run off the books last night or yesterday, this morning. It is yesterday over there, but you get the idea. This morning,
yeah, it was
for us.
On at like whatever 6 o'clock.
The daily download on Dukes and Bell, brought to you by ATL Live Well. Don't just live, live well. We got plenty more to dive into. We'll get into a 4th-and-1. We'll talk about it. I mean, the Vikings said thanks, but no thanks to Aaron Rodgers. Could you really go home again for Kirk Cousins? Could you? To Minnesota? That seems like makes less sense than taking Aaron Rodgers. We'll chop it up. This hour of Dukes and Bell, guys, is brought to you by Padley. You can go to the website. It's pretty simple. It's Padley buys homes. Padley.com. Go get yourself a deal.